An Australian bishop is set to take up a top Vatican job. Pope Leo has announced Anthony Randazzo of the Broken Bay Diocese will become the new prefect of the Dicastery for Legislative Texts. That means he'll be responsible for interpreting and applying church law throughout the Catholic world. He'll become the most senior Australian cleric in the Vatican since the late George Pell, who was prefect for the economy. And the Pope had some pointed words for the residents of the world's wealthiest state this week. In a day-long visit to Monaco, where one in three people are millionaires, Leo condemned, quote, the idolatry of power and money. He also reminded them Jesus was an advocate for the poor and the outcast. Each Easter, we bring you stories from places where war and other disasters can try a person's faith, but where, despite the despair, their religious beliefs survive. Asuntha Charles has worked with the faith-based aid organisation World Vision. She's been in Afghanistan under the Taliban and in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh. That's where 1.1 million Rohingya Muslims fled the military regime in Myanmar, Burma. She was in Australia recently with the Mica Women's Network.
I can never forget those moments because I was just staying at my guest house. I could hear my security guards telling me that the Taliban are taking over Kabul and the airport was in a chaotic situation. I just wanted to see what's happening around. I asked my driver and the security guard to accompany me, and we were just moving into the airport. I could see people were beaten up because they were just rushing to the airport just to get a flight to move out of the country. I could see the frustration. I could see children running everywhere looking for a place for safety. Just the families trying to protect their children. It was an extremely a challenging situation to see people just running around and looking for places of safety.
Yeah, most of the aid community and the international relief community felt they had to leave for their own safety. Why didn't you, though?
I felt if I have to serve people, how can I leave them when they need me the most? Because these are the challenging moments, including my staff, they're desperate. If I leave the country, that sends very wrong signals that World Vision as a Christian organization will not be there when people need us the most. So I really wanted to give a positive note and a hope to people. The organization will be there where the need is huge.
Did you think of it as being brave, though? Were you conscious at the time that what you were doing was a fairly risky proposition for you?
I was totally aware of what was happening and how risky it would be for me as a woman, as a leader of a Christian organization. But somewhere I felt that's what I'm supposed to do as a leader.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm expected as a leader of an organization, to stand by the people.
How do you think the Taliban perceived the work of foreign aid organizations, especially Christian organizations? Because I think Afghanistan is something like a 98% Muslim country. While it has lots of ethnic and tribal diversity, it is not a religiously diverse country. I'm just wondering how you think a fundamentalist organization like the Taliban thought of a Christian organization. Were they suspicious of what are you doing in Afghanistan?
Actually, we kept our communications very transparent. And from the beginning, we were very clear what we are doing on the ground. As a child-focused organization, everybody knew that we are there in Afghanistan to support the children. And that constant messaging, that transparency and accountability helped us a lot. Even Taliban knew, because we were also working in many of those areas, but they knew us as an organization working for children. And that credibility actually helped us to move into areas that no organization could go.
Did you find yourself, though, having to not suppress, but maybe be a little less open about your identity as a Christian organization?
I don't think so. We were always mentioning and calling ourselves as World Vision a child-focused organization.
Yeah.
So that's why we maintained that kind of a communication to every stakeholder. So children were our focus, nothing else.
Yeah. What were the challenges that the children faced, particularly after the Taliban's return to power? There was a sense that there had been, well, not a very easy 20 years, but a 20 years in which women and girls had made some advances. What were the fears when the Taliban returned to power?
The main fear was the freedom for women, because they knew what had happened before 20 years, how educational opportunities, employment opportunities were totally not reaching them, and they were fearful. They thought they are going to lose the opportunity to learn, because many Afghan girls were studying. There were lawyers, doctors. They were in influential positions. Once Taliban were coming back, that was the strongest fear, that they would disappear from the society.
What signs of resilience did you see among those women and girls, given that society was closing in on them again? I'm assuming that just because the government changes, their aspirations and their hopes don't change.
I always marvel at the spirit of every Afghan woman and girl child. They are finding ways and means to keep those aspirations alive. I am connected with some of them, and I still see that spirit for growth, spirit for aspirations, and they have never given up. That is why I admire Afghan women and Afghan girls.
I'm wondering now, realistically, how women can prosper, women can advance in that society. I know you're still in touch, as you say, with many of the women there. I'm just wondering what the realistic prospects are.
This situation is not new for women, especially for Afghan women. They faced a similar situation before the Taliban period. And even those days, they studied. This situation is also similar to that. Every organization present in Afghanistan is trying to see how we can support women to learn, to be employed. These are the constant struggles that every organization goes through so that women don't disappear from the society.
Have things settled as best as you can ascertain? I mean, is there a realistic streak among some people in the Taliban that you can't eliminate the talents and the contribution of 50% of the population? I mean, is there any shard of light there?
That's the positive thing that I see. Like, as soon as Taliban taking over, it was not like the previous time. There were also progressive thinking Taliban who wanted women to study. They were also against schools being closed. So there are people who give us the hope that things will go in the right direction.
Take us to another very challenging location. It's Cox's Bazar. It's in Bangladesh. It's on the border with Myanmar, Burma. Most of the refugees there were Rohingya Muslims.
Yeah.
In the midst of a very desperate situation, I think at one point there was 1.1 million refugees from Myanmar, Burma. What gave you hope in that circumstance? Because to those who looked from outside, it looked like a place of utter despair.
I lived there for nearly 1 year supporting the Rohingyas. I know how difficult it is to stay on in those camps. 33 camps in a very small geographical area, 1.1 million people, and 50% of them not children. It's a painful situation to see how people struggle every day. Even for water, privacy is a question. And especially the lives of women turns out to be a bigger challenge in those circumstances.
Yeah, I'm wondering why women are disproportionately affected as refugees.
In any disaster, women and children become the most vulnerable people because they really hold on to so many responsibilities. They also take care of the family. They want to take care of the children. They want to protect everyone. It's not only within the family, but they also want to take care of their neighbors.
Yeah.
It's easy for somebody to escape alone, but I'm sure women will not do that. They will carry their children with them.
Yeah. Pope Francis, I think, said that he saw the face of Christ in a Rohingya child, a Rohingya Muslim child. Do you recall that statement?
Yes. The Pope visited Cox's Bazar and he met the Rohingya children. And what he said is the real truth. And every child brings out so much of innocence. And it is so pathetic to see that they are losing their childhood. Because they are in a place which doesn't belong to them. They are in a place where they cannot have their rights. And that, in a sense, is what I'm sure Pope calls it as a face of Christ.
Yeah,
he's right.
Your new appointment to head World Vision based in the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu, to some people it might seem a much easier task. But what's the challenges that you think you'll have to deal with in the South Pacific?
Yeah, the challenges are different, but the challenges are there. That's what I would say.
Sure.
Maybe it's not war and it's not the refugees, it's not people getting killed that I see, but I see children getting affected by the impact of climate change. Their lives are being threatened. Their dreams are getting destroyed because the climate is really pulling away all that is really close to their heart. Their land is being taken away. Agriculture is not becoming productive. Sea is not productive. So the natural resources which were so close to their heart is drying up.
Assunta Charles, she's the new National Director of World Vision for the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu. Thank you very much for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.